Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason. Watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us on the Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you're looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. In the meantime, I want to tell you about Hot Tub Outlet in Littleton. I was just there today, and man, they have a huge inventory of hot tubs, two different warehouses ready to sell right now, 15 different models. And guess what? They have truckloads of hot tubs delivered every month, while other hot tub stores could make you wait over 6 months to get a hot tub. If this sounds like you or somebody you know and you want a hot tub, or maybe you want a sauna, you need to get over to Hot Tub Outlet in Littleton. Everything is made in the U.S. Great quality, best insulation. Go to Hot Tub Outlet in Littleton or hottuboutletdenver.com right now. Danny, we have some breaking news right now, and this is very, very important stuff. Do we have that breaking news music? Because I think this definitely needs the music bed for me to talk about. Okay, this story breaking as we speak, having to do with one Eric Goodman, who is supposed to go to jury duty on Monday, and I have been excused.
Whether you're a weekend warrior.
Yes!
Congratulations.
Looks like I'll be doing the show with you on Monday.
So that your civic duty is that you don't have to do your civic duty.
Exactly.
Yeah. That, you know what? It often comes out that way that you get excused.
So great.
But then every so often you get called in. And like the last time it was my number, I actually got called in.
Yep.
But then when we were...
You hated all minorities?
No, I wouldn't do that. Because I don't feel that way.
Okay, Jewish people.
But what happened was, it was a case involving somebody who stopped, who hit their brakes, and then somebody kind of went into them, and there was a little bit of a potential insurance fraud involved, and I had been the victim of some of that at one point in my life, and I point blank told the attorneys that, look, I've been through something like this, And the way and it seems like to me there's some fraud going on, and I'm not in, and I don't think I can be impartial. And the attorneys looked at each other and said, "Okay, you're excused."
Well, last time I was called for jury duty. Yeah. So right now, so those that need to report on Monday, jurors 1086 through 1237. Let's just say those were the numbers the last time.
Yeah.
I was like 1235.
Yeah.
I just missed it. In this case, I am 1523. I wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Anyway, I told Danny this when I walked in the door. So not only was I called for jury duty, they put me on a case, and I know this seems shocking, I was the foreman of the jury.
I'm positively stunned at that.
Well, so we're going through...
kind of a big deal.
So we're going through the jury selection process, and there was a woman there who... I hate to say it this way. She was an unmade bed. She just was. You knew she had a lot of emotional issues. She needed her husband there in the courtroom. She couldn't be out of her house for any extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And both attorneys accepted her. And you just knew there was going to be a problem. And everybody who is currently picked for the jury, we were just rolling our eyes. So... next day, we go into court, and guess who's not there? That woman is not there.
Oh, my.
She was excused, and then we had to go through the process again. So I looked at the judge, as the foreman, of course, and I said, "Judge, you knew this was going to happen. You knew there was going to be a problem, and yet you allowed it, and it turned out that way, and now you have wasted all of our time." And she looked at me and said, "Mr. Goodman, I appreciate your opinion, but it is not welcome here in my courtroom." And we moved on.
You know what? I'm trying to imagine you functioning in an environment where you're told your opinion is not welcome.
Well, and that's
like most of us functioning without oxygen.
In that venue, I know it wasn't welcome, and I didn't want to be held in contempt, and I had no interest in getting cuffed by Rusty the bailiff and taken downstairs. So I just kind of let that one ride. And what's funny is after the, I'll tell you what I learned about that particular case. It was a DUI case. And I learned in that case that if you ever get pulled over, hopefully you're never drinking and driving anyway. But if you ever get pulled over, never, ever, ever do the field sobriety test. Because a lot of sober people will fail that.
Yeah.
And they will ding you that fast.
Right.
So if you ever get pulled over, tell them, I'm not taking this field sobriety test. I am not walking in a straight line. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I'm not taking the breathalyzer right here. Take me back. Give me a blood test. And that's that. As it turns out, the guy did take the field sobriety test, but he was as guilty as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in that jury room probably for a total of 15 minutes. It was just so obvious that this guy was guilty. I asked everybody on the jury to refer to me as Jack McCoy. Was that wrong?
I thought that you wanted them referred to as Your Honor.
No, because somebody else has that title. I wanted to be Jack McCoy.
Jack McCoy?
Yeah.
Why Jack McCoy?
Well, he was a head guy in Law & Order.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch those shows?
No.
Really?
I mean, here and there, but nothing like regularly. I mean, the only character I know from the Law & Order shows was Lenny Briscoe. Played by the late, great Jerry Orbach.
He was terrific.
Yes.
No one puts baby in a corner. No one puts baby in a corner.
He's also the voice of one of the characters in Beauty and the Beast.
Really?
And quite a successful Broadway actor.
Are you a TV guy? Meaning, do you like to, do you ever binge watch shows?
Not really, no. And in fact, like the show Ted Lasso on Apple TV, that came, the first episode of the new season came on last night at 10 p.m.
What's it on?
Apple TV Plus.
You know what? I haven't. I still need to watch it.
Yeah. And yeah, the first episode of the second season was last night. I watched it, but it's not going to be a binge thing because it's every Thursday night at midnight Eastern, 10 p.m. Mountain. So literally like every Thursday night for the next few weeks, I'll be sitting there watching Ted Lasso wherever I am.
Do you like courtroom type of dramas? Not necessarily Law and Order, where it's all based in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Because I'll give you a great one that Mandy and I just started to watch. It's called The Good Fight, and it is terrific. And it's a great cast. Christine Baranski, Delroy Lindo's in it. Uh-huh. It's a really, really, really good series. And the second, you could tell that the writing has upped its game. The writers upped its game in the second season.
Right.
So if you're looking for something to binge watch, if you're looking for something to watch, it is called The Good Fight. I know this is important to you. There is partial nudity and there is some swearing in it. Which part is more important to you? Don't say neither because I know you're lying.
I don't make my show decisions based on those types of things.
That's not what Amy told me in a text.
The last two shows.
Amy in a text told me you love that stuff.
Oh, yeah, right. You must be texting with a different Amy.
I don't think I am, unless there's another Amy Mason out there.
Yeah, Lumiere, the candlestick, by the way, is who Jerry Orbach played.
Oh.
We got that from the Rocky Mount Forest Park's Twitter feed, by the way.
Why? Did somebody send that to
us? Someone at Hayden T, at Renard X on Twitter, says it was a Lumiere that he played. My daughter probably could have identified it right away, too. Oh. Yeah, but anyway.
How come he didn't send that to me, only you?
Because I don't know. Because
you're more popular than I am.
Maybe this is another time for the kind of a big deal drop.
No, well, right? Apparently you're the one who's the big deal. Coming up after the break, we teased it going into the 5 o'clock hour, but it was more important to talk about my lack of having to go to jury duty on Monday.
Well, I understand. That's kind of a big deal for anybody.
As one of my former radio partners, Mark McIntosh, used to say, it's not about us. It's all about you. In this case, it's not about you. It's all about me. Warren Sharp. He is a stat geek in football. And boy, I don't think I've ever heard criticism written so viciously about Drew Lock in all the years he's been playing for the Broncos. That's next. Tell each other fairy tales, and we step beautiful women.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive, Goodman Mason. Watch us, milehighsports.com. You can reach us on the Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, not retail, talking about wholesale lumber to the public for your next project, like a deck, a fence, siding, don't pay too much. Why would you ever want to pay too much? Especially when you're doing a big project. If you're building a fence, think of the money that you are going to save going to Rocky Mountain Forest Products. Not to mention, talk about great quality. You know, you have been in structures that have that Rocky Mountain Forest product quality. What am I talking about? A lot of you have been to Empower Field. A lot of you have been to Coors Field. Yeah, when the best structures go up, they want to go with Rocky Mountain Forest products. Why shouldn't you? Especially when the pricing is wholesale lumber to the public. You can find them in Wheat Ridge or go to rmfp.com. Time now for The Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Rocky Mountain Forest Products, where they specialize in wholesale lumber to the public. Go to Rocky Mountain Forest Products in Wheat Ridge or go to rmfp.com.
All right, guy by the name of Warren Sharp. He owns Sharp Football Stats. Fair to say he's a, you know, stat geek. Nothing wrong with that. He's the author of a stat-based book on football. And recently he wrote an article for NBC Sports Edge and Yahoo, and this was the headline. The Broncos have a Drew Lock-sized problem. This is what he writes. I would love to see the Denver Broncos be successful in 2021, but I'm afraid they have a Drew Lock-sized problem. And with Pat Shurmur at the helm, I am worried they will be unable to fix the problem. Let's talk about his data. He shows that only 49% of the passes that Lock threw beyond 15 yards were catchable. Nearly half the passes he threw, according to Sharp, were not catchable
beyond 15 yards.
Putting him in the same company as Dwayne Haskins, bust. Mitchell Trubisky, likely bust. Carson Wentz, injured a lot, trying to rebound. And Sam Darnold, who did not work out with the Jets. With that, when Lock throws deep and to his right, okay, so throwing basically across his body.
Well, to his right wouldn't be across his
body. Oh, to his right.
To his right. Well, then to his left is across his body.
Okay. So then the strong side for him.
Uh-huh.
He ranked dead last among 35 quarterbacks with at least 35 attempts to the right. That should be your easiest throw as a right-handed quarterback. But then he continues to write, and this is probably the most damning. Unfortunately, it's not a variance issue with Lock. Where there's some high-end plays to make up for the poor ones, Locke's best stuff, deep, is generally league average. His typical deep throw is well below average, and he gradually drops further below average the deeper down the field he targets.
Take that for data.
That's damning, because what it's saying here is this... One of the things you like about Drew Lock is his arm talent and conceivably the ability to go deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he can whiz the ball in there.
According to the stats, that's not true.
Right. The accuracy isn't there. I mean, it's not there at a level it needs to be in the NFL. Now, one thing it gets into, and this is something that has been commonly said, is that Drew Lock does become a better passer when you go play action. And particularly when
almost everybody does better.
Exactly. Because why? Because the defense has to kind of pause and reset for a minute if you sell the play, or for a second if you sell the play action well. And almost every quarterback improves. Every quarterback should improve in play action. But the thing is, if you have a quarterback in Drew Lock who can do kind of who can succeed at two things, he can succeed at play action. And he can get the ball out the first read and use that arm talent to beat a defender before they react. But if you can only do those two things, that puts a very distinct ceiling on your potential.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to argue with the data, but I am going to argue with the overall assessment in this.
Mm-hmm.
what Warren Sharp, I'm not questioning his work, but I am questioning his method. And what I mean by that is, whoever was playing right tackle last year for the Broncos, maybe that guy missed a block and it forced Drew Lock to throw the ball early. That's not cited here, I'm guessing. Maybe a wide receiver ran the wrong route, and maybe that's why Drew Lock overthrew the guy. He's going by hard black and white data. But if you color it, maybe Lloyd Cushenberry did not make a block, or Philip Lindsay missed a block. And that's what we don't have in here. He is going by just Drew Lock as if he was the only guy on the field, and he's not taking into account maybe the other mistakes his teammates made on the field.
If we were talking about Drew Lock being kind of lower middle tier, I think that would have some merit, because then you could say, okay, you start putting these things together and maybe he is actually above average.
I'm not suggesting he's above average.
But when you're floating down at the bottom, even if those if you get some of those things to go at a league average rate, it doesn't mean you're going to rise to the top. You're still going to be in that lower quarter, lower third of the league, even if there are all these things that could change that are beyond your control.
Here's something else that Warren Sharp conveniently leaves out. He had a rookie wide receiver in Jerry Jeudy. He had a rookie wide receiver in KJ Hamler.
Rookie wide receiver in Jerry Jeudy was getting open all the time.
I didn't say he wasn't. He had a rookie tight end in Okwuegbunam. He had a young tight end in Fant. He had a guy in Philip Lindsay who wasn't very good at blocking. I'm not defending Drew Lock. What I'm saying is we are seeing a clear picture through the lens of Warren Sharp, but we are not seeing the entire picture. But let's take it to this direction. The right offensive coordinator for Drew Lock is the guy they had the previous year, because Scangarello was willing to do things to make Drew Lock successful, which unfortunately was having him throw to only one third of the field. So everything was in view for him, all two or three of his wide receivers running routes, and he didn't have to scan the field. Unfortunately, and that's why I think his numbers were better his rookie year. Shurmur made Lock look at the entire field, which is what really good quarterbacks have to do. But because Drew Lock wasn't necessarily ready for that, that was probably one reason why his numbers sank like a stone. But I'll flip this around. Scangarello, while he was doing Drew Lock a favor in the short term, he was doing him no favors in the long term. I told you that I thought of an analogy for this, and this is the analogy. It's kind of like a power hitter who is just fantastic. Okay,
yeah.
Strong arm. He can hit the ball out of the field, right? Out of the park. The problem is he pulls every single time that the other manager has done a shift where every single guy, if Lock is a right-handed hitter, every single guy is standing on the right side of second base. And that is one-third of the field. Eventually that becomes predictable, and you're going to get that guy out every time unless he hits it over the outfielder's head and into the stands. His batting average is going to be garbage.
And Drew Lock is the quarterback he's the equivalent here, right? Because he's better in play action. He's good in first read, but defenses can pretty easily adjust to that. And in defense of Pat Shurmur, he put a lot on Drew Lock's plate last year, forced him to drop back, scan the field, go through his progressions, get to where he could use the whole field, because ultimately, if you're going to succeed as a quarterback in the NFL, potentially be elite, you've got to be able to get to the third and fourth read, and you've got to be able to have the whole field of vision at your disposal. And Drew Lock struggled at that. When it's play action, when it's first read, did fine. The thing is, that works if you're ahead, but if you fall behind by 10, 14 points, all of a sudden play action doesn't get taken seriously
by a
defense, and it's something that you can't lean on. It ceases to be a viable tool in your drawer, and this is just one of the reasons why if you're Shurmur, you're kind of, with Drew Lock, you're kind of stuck here. You're like, okay, do I try to get him to do the things better that he doesn't do well, or do I adapt to just what he is, knowing that defenses can kind of quickly catch on to that?
There's a reason why Mike Shanahan pulled Jake Plummer as his quarterback, because he felt he had to trim down the playbook for Jake because he didn't feel he could run the entire playbook. That's why he put in Jay Cutler after that Kansas City game, which was on Thanksgiving.
And you remember, I think Mike Shanahan said something at the time that basically said, I'm putting Jay Cutler in now because I don't feel, if we get to the playoffs, I don't feel like we're going to be able to do as much as we need to do. But Jay Cutler, if he grew in those five games, did give them a chance to do those things.
Listen, everybody is going to be looking for different things at training camp, specifically with these quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. If Drew Lock does well, I think he may have turned a corner. If he doesn't do well, I think that's what most people are going to expect. And it has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with that secondary. He's going to be playing arguably the best secondary in practice than he will in a game. You can make the case he might be playing against the best pass rush in practice than he will be in a game. If Drew Lock thrives, he may have turned that corner. But the truth is, looking at his history, he's only going to get worse.
I hope that's not the case.
No. I know what we're hoping. Yeah. But do you buy that theory?
I buy that theory, but here's the thing. That defense is going to make plays no matter what at some point. And so a huge test for Drew Lock is how he handles adversity. Does one mistake become two or three? Because as we saw, for example, against the Raiders in Las Vegas last year, against the Falcons, against the Buffalo Bills here in Denver, a big issue for Drew Lock was that one mistake became two, three, four things,
right,
and it multiplied and got out of control. He's got to have that short memory that they say a corner has to have where, okay, you make the mistake, forget it. And one thing that was worrisome in OTAs is that when he had an interception, he had a bad read, something went wrong, it seemed like it became two or three mistakes really quickly before he could get back on his feet and get his confidence again. He's got to make sure that if one thing goes wrong, he gets beaten one time, he gets picked. Okay, that's it. Get it out of my mind. Go on to the next play. He's got to have the short memory.
When I used to play competitive tennis, I would remind myself of this all the time, every time I had an unforced error. Every point is a new point. Mm-hmm. Every point is a new point.
I hope he can do that.
I hope he can too. Coming up after the break, looks like the SEC is going to be expanding to 16 teams with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. With that, how is the ACC scrambling? Because they are. Big 12 scrambling. Pac-12 scrambling. What is the latest on what their plans are? That's next.
My lady, come, my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar, baby.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason, watch us, MileHighSports.com. You can reach us on the Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. Time now for the final, not for the final word. I've done that all week. You know what? There's got to be something that's trending.
What's trending? presented by Silterhar Mazda. Get to Silterhar in Broomfield for a no-pressure buying experience at Silterhar Mazda or find them at sthmazda.com.
Well, we do have something that is trending, and the beauty of Twitter is you hope some of your friends or people that you follow will retweet something in case there is something that you missed. And we just discovered something that could be enormous news.
Yeah.
Mace, share with the class.
All right. This is from Jack McGuire, verified account at JackMacCFB, who...
I'm not verified. Does that mean I'm not any good? Thanks.
You're good.
Whatever.
You should be verified.
You know what?
They're actually reopening.
Oh, now I should be verified.
They're actually reopening verification again.
I know. I got turned down.
So, what?
Yep.
Recently?
Yeah.
You kidding me?
I'm not kidding at all.
That's terrible. Anyway.
Oh, thanks. You're a real pal.
So anyway, Jack McGuire, he does a lot of college football stuff for Barstool Sports. Okay. He tweeted out this earlier this afternoon. Quote, SEC has been in serious contact with Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, and Florida State. Not clear if this will materialize, but they have their eyes on a true 20-team mega conference, OU in Texas, just the start, unquote.
Wow, the SEC is poaching big time. And I will tell you something. Ohio State and Michigan, they would go together. Michigan does not care about Michigan State or Purdue, and Ohio State doesn't care about Indiana or Iowa.
Kind of like Oklahoma and Texas don't care about the rest of the schools in the Big 12.
They're specifically Texas.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's telling that it's these two potentially going together to the SEC. What's the biggest game on the calendar in the Big 12 every year? Texas-Oklahoma, Red River rivalry at the Cotton Bowl. What's right. the biggest game on the Big 10 calendar every year? The two schools join at the hip. It's Ohio State, Michigan.
And then you're poaching two teams from the ACC. Clemson and Florida State.
The two that have won national championships over the last 20 years.
I say this with all due respect to every other school, and of course I'm including Colorado in this. If the SEC, now granted, they have some teams in there that, you know, Vanderbilt and so on and so forth. There are a few teams that aren't very good.
Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky.
Right. Yeah, but Kentucky has basketball.
Yeah.
With that.
South Carolina just made a Final Four, too. Don't know what Mizzou has.
When it comes to college football, if Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, and Florida State join this mega conference, every other school will be in the minor leagues.
Yes.
This 20-team conference will get, I'm not going to say an NFL-sized type of contract for television, but they will get a huge one, and it'll be the only thing worth watching every Saturday. And I think it'll be so powerful that they will hold their own national championship, and it'll be like the NFL and the AFL. The NFL looked at the AFL as a bunch of also-rans until they merged. I don't think they'll allow anybody in their club, and they'll say, we are the national championship, whether you want to crown us or not. That's who we are.
Yeah, and they would effectively maybe be kind of going by a different set of rules almost, because if you're the SEC and if you had the 20-team mega conference like this, effectively, it would behoove you to just declare your own national champion,
right?
Because then that means you don't have to go and pay $1 million to Jacksonville State or to Georgia Southern or to the Citadel to go play a game and get their butt kicked. They could simply say, we're just going to play among ourselves, and then at the end of our season, that we're going to have an 18 playoff out of our 20,
right.
And that's our champion. That's it.
Right. You have four different divisions,
mm-hmm.
right? And doing the math, well, five teams each, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the top two teams from each division, right? Top two teams from each division.
Or you do it NFL
eight
style.
Eight-game playoff.
Four division champions and four wild cards.
Right.
That's probably what you do.
And then you have a wild card weekend or wherever you want to do it. And the top two teams get byes.
Yeah.
And you know what? I feel badly for a school like Colorado, but no one's going to care because it's not going to feel like you're really playing for anything. They might have their own poll. The AP poll and the coaches poll might go by the wayside. It is going to be like the NFL and the AFL, in which, let's say you have the best team outside of that conference. the winner of the outside of the conference, the best team, is going to be treated like the Jets going up against the Colts in Super Bowl III. They might win, they might guarantee it, but chances are they're probably not going to, because let's be honest here. When you look at the playoffs, oh, can you look up the playoffs over the last 4 years?
Yes.
Because what you've essentially had is either Alabama and LSU, Ohio State,
Clemson,
Alabama. At least three of those four teams have probably been in every single one. Recruiting is going to be outrageous. And you know what else? The kids that go there, especially the kids that star, are going to be making more than $1 million a year.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing.
They're going to make far more than that.
With NIL, it wouldn't just be about getting a deal with Bob's Country Bunker Honda. It would be you're getting deals with major multinational corporations. All right, just taking a look at the playoffs.
Last year it was who? It was Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama for sure.
And Notre Dame.
Okay.
And then the year before it was LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma.
Okay, and Oklahoma's not going to be a part of that.
No, Oklahoma would be because they're
in the SEC. That's what I said. Now they are going to be a part of that.
Right.
All four teams.
Yeah, 2018, Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, Notre Dame.
Okay.
2017, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma.
Okay, three of the teams.
2016, Alabama, Washington, Clemson, Ohio State.
There you go. There's three.
2015, Clemson, Oklahoma, Alabama, Michigan State.
You could stop right there, and I'll tell you why.
The year before, you had Oregon. So
you know who might be the odd man out?
Notre Dame.
The most arrogant school of the bunch. And I grew up going to Notre Dame games. Oh, no, we have to have our own network. You know what? You want to come join us? Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, you're going to give up your NBC contract or you're going to be playing with the also-rans.
You know what? And actually, I kind of see this. If this thing came to fruition.
Florida State goes, or maybe they kick out what?
I think they kick out Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I think they kick out Vanderbilt and bring Notre Dame in.
I don't know. How do you do that? How do you kick them out?
I mean, you have a vote of the other presidents. The thing is, though, it's the university presidents. And I'll say this, the university presidents, even though they're thinking about money, every other university president in that conference, and that's why I don't think it's likely, they like having Vanderbilt there because Vanderbilt makes the SEC look legitimate beyond sports. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
they can say, well,
we have great academics.
They can.
We had Jay Cutler.
Love
Nashville.
They can look at Vanderbilt and they can look at a few of their schools that are in the AAU Association of American Universities, like Texas A&M, Florida, and Missouri. And then you've got Vanderbilt there, and they can say, well, we do have these schools that would be more than good fits in the Big Ten.
You know what it would be? what do you call the state of Missouri? What's the nickname?
Mizzou.
No, the state of Missouri. It's the what me state.
Show me.
And it's going to be show me the door state because they might get booted. Arkansas might get booted. They've been nothing recently. They're going to take the runt of the litter and kick it away from the teat and say, we got Notre Dame to fill your spot.
You know what? If this sort of thing happened, you know what I think?
Would you like it?
No.
I'd love it.
But here,
I would.
Here's what I think.
Maybe must watch television.
Okay, here's what I think would happen next. If this happened, if this wild thing happened and the Big Ten lost Ohio State and Michigan, right. I believe the Big Ten would then create their own super conference.
Oh, with Iowa and Wisconsin and Oklahoma State.
No, I'll actually tell you who they would create with, because it would also involve all sports, including basketball. They would take who's left, and they would probably add USC and UCLA.
Yeah. I'm telling you, when it comes to time zones, let me tell you something about the time zone thing. You cannot have, I'm being serious, you cannot have Wisconsin playing a 10:30 at night game Madison time in LA.
All these things don't matter anymore.
Well, they might go out the window.
Because if you're talking about a mega conference,
right,
it'd be USC, UCLA, probably North Carolina, Duke.
Yeah.
Miami.
Yeah.
And
do one hell of a basketball conference.
And I don't know who else.
How would you like to
Miami, Virginia Tech.
Do you have to call them Virginia?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
And Syracuse.
How would you like to be the new Pac-12 commissioner and nobody wants any of your teams?
Yeah. And maybe you throw in like Washington and Oregon as well. That basically,
you have two super conferences.
So basically you'd have a conference that could potentially stretch from Seattle to Miami.
And where does Colorado fit?
That's a good question because they would be, I think they would be behind these schools that we're talking about, like Carolina and Washington and USC.
Even Kansas would be involved because they're basketball.
They'd be behind Miami because Miami's can win national titles.
What do we have coming up on Masterpiece Roofing, just in case you missed it?
The Cleveland baseball team has a new nickname. We'll talk about that next right here on Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason on Mile High Sports. That's a fight. It's a fight, yeah, late night. Oh, it's a fight.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
All right, we got some breaking news, and this is huge if you are an Avalanche fan, and it's not good news. When I start what I'm about to say, you're going to say, why is this a big deal? You'll understand why in a minute. The Chicago Blackhawks have made a trade with the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Blackhawks get Seth Jones, who is the second overall pick in the same draft as Nathan MacKinnon. Mm-hmm. And Seth Jones has signed a new deal with the Blackhawks. 8 years, $76 million, 9.5 a year. And Cale Makar is going to want more than that. And he should get it.
Yeah, because he's better.
Yes, he is. So Cale Makar is about to become a $10 million man because someone is going to offer that to him. Because remember, he's a restricted free agent. And lest I remind you what happened many, many years ago with the New York Rangers and Joe Sakic. And another team is going to offer Cale Makar that type of money and will force the Avs to match.
What's interesting is seeing the reaction on social media to Seth Jones getting this deal, and people are flabbergasted by the contract terms because it feels like an overpay. But Cale Makar,
he's loving that.
Cale Makar deserves 20% more than Seth Jones does.
Here, the Avalanche saved money on Donskoy going to the Kraken. Probably close to $4 million.
That was helpful for them.
And I am guessing Joe Sakic thought, okay, I'm shaving $4 million off of my cap. Maybe I can offer a little bit more to Landeskog. Probably don't want to. Well, you know what? He might need that for Cale Makar.
And Makar is a higher priority than Landeskog.
No question. Time now for the final word.
The final word. Is presented by the McKenzie Law Firm. Don't wait before it's too late. Protect your family by setting up a will, living will, or estate plan with Dan McKenzie at themckenziefirm.com. Just in case you missed it, is presented by Masterpiece Roofing. Find out how Masterpiece can get your insurance company to pay for your roof. Call 720-242-6404. Or go to MasterpieceRoofing.com today.
Just in case you missed it, Cleveland announced its new nickname this morning, the Cleveland Guardians. The colors will stay the same. The name in honor of statues located near the now formerly Indians home stadium, referred to as Guardians of Cleveland. Do you like the new name, and do you think other teams that still have Native American imagery in their mascots will follow suit now that the Washington football team and the Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Guardians now, are making the change?
You know what? I like this name. The more I hear it, the more I see it. I would have preferred Spiders because of the connection to past Cleveland baseball history with that nickname, but Guardians works, and I like the fact that it's a distinctly local name with local flavor.
They did a two-minute video release of changing the name, and it was brilliantly written, very well edited, and they explained it very well.
I agree.
Number one, the logo is terrific. The historical significance is there. Also, and maybe they thought of this, what are the last three or four letters in Guardians?
And I think that's
I-A-N-S. Yes. Indians.
I think that's
I-A-N-S. And they never change the font.
Yeah, the script script is the same, right?
The font is the same as well.
Yeah.
So it's a change of name, but you can make the case it ties to Cleveland history. Mm-hmm. The logo is fantastic, well explained. I-A-N-S.
Yeah.
I got to tell you,
I think
it kind of looks the same, doesn't it? Danny, you just looked at it for the first time, didn't you?
I had seen it earlier today, but I hadn't noticed the font, and the font is very much the same as it was. Yeah, it's still that D-I-A-N-S at the end.
Yeah,
all the geometry is the same.
Right?
Yeah, they did a good job with
it. So it's not like it's this rat. It's a change, clearly, but it's a soft landing.
It's a soft landing. It's an evolution. Now, the question then becomes, what of the other names with Native American connections? Atlanta Braves, Kansas City Chiefs, Chicago Blackhawks, even Golden State Warriors, even though they use no Native American iconography, that is originally Native American.
I've said this before and I'll repeat it again. This is not my topic to speak on. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about something Jewish, anti-Semitic, I will talk about it all day. I cannot speak for Native Americans. If it offends them, it should be changed. If it doesn't offend them, then so be it. White people should not be commenting on this.
I agree. And it's not our argument. And
nope.
I mean, if the Braves heard, for example, that we in the Native American community don't want this name, then I would be fine with them getting rid of it. Even though I'm a huge Atlanta Braves fan, the one thing we do know is that they have objected to the tomahawk chop.
Yeah. Well, what about it? They do the same thing in Kansas City?
I know.
They do the same thing with the Florida State Seminoles.
Now, the Florida State Seminoles have always gotten by with it because they run the stuff they do by the Seminole Tribe of Florida.
Right.
And that's also, that justification is what kind of the Braves and the Chiefs have leaned on. But
you know if the Seminole Nation gets paid by Florida State?
I don't know if they're paid.
Would it make a difference if they were?
I know that they donate stuff too.
Oh.
And also, for example, you know how at Florida State you have the student dressed as an Indian chief riding on a horse with a spear.
Yep.
That student is always a member of the Seminole tribe.
Right.
And that tradition was run by the Seminoles before they did it. So you give credit to FSU for trying to keep the right people in the loop on what they do.
That was Masterpiece Roofing. Just in case you missed, we've had some hail over the last 6 weeks. So what are you going to do? My suggestion, call Denver's best roofing company, Masterpiece Roofing. Why do I say that? They were voted Denver's best roofing company. Call for a free roof inspection today to see how Masterpiece can get your insurance company to pay for your roof. Go to MasterpieceRoofing.com. Great shows this week, everyone. Nolan, Danny, Mace, I got to step up my game. Next week's my week. You know why? It's the week of training camp. We made it. That's Monday. Have a good night.